Welcome to Just Another Hunting Podcast. This is Steve with Mountain to Coast Outdoors in collaboration with Joseph from Way Out West Adventures. We dive deep into the world of hunting, exploring tactics, gear, and unforgettable stories from the field. Join us each week as we interview seasoned experts and passionate enthusiasts who share insights and experiences to help you enhance your hunting skills. Whether you're a novice seeking guidance or a veteran hunter looking for new challenges, this is your go-to resource for all things hunting. Tune in each week to step up your game and to connect with the community who shares your love for the great outdoors. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode. Today we have Josh Kirchner on, Dialed In Hunter on IG. I've been watching his stuff on YouTube for, I don't even know, quite a few years now. And he's put together a couple of awesome films that really hit home for me, inspired me to push myself in the video world and hunting and all that stuff. But anyway, man, he's joining us tonight, and here he is. So thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me, man. It's always nice to get together with like-minded folks and talk about hunting, especially ones that also like cameras.
Yeah, don't get me started on cameras. I think the last couple of podcasts, that's all I talked about for like 3 hours. So.
Oh, dude, it's an absolute rabbit hole, man. It really is. You can get really out of hand.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because I work in the construction industry. So like technology really isn't my strong suit. And I never had like Facebook or any of that stuff growing up. So this whole social media thing's pretty new to me. But learning how to use a camera from the get-go was like quite the learning curve.
Dude. So a quote I heard when I first started, my wife told me this, is everyone is a photographer until you put the camera on manual.
Yeah.
Okay. So like, I know exactly what you're talking about, but I tell you what, dude, like going through the motions of actually learning, like taking that dang thing off auto and actually learning how to use the camera and what different settings do and what ISO is and aperture and all that stuff. Like you're going to be so much better at conveying the message that you want to tell people through your imagery or video, actually knowing that stuff. You just have so much more freedom to manipulate an image.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, ISO is obviously a big thing, but like when I first started out, I ran everything on auto and uploaded stuff at the wrong frame size. And I mean, it was just a mess. And I finally feel like almost four years, but I finally feel like I kind of figured out the camera. So that's a little bit of a relief.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, man. It's good to, once you get past that point of like, wait a minute, did I do that right? Or whatever, then you can actually like focus on the creating side of things, you know, yeah. And like, yeah. Kind of let your imagination run wild there instead of worrying about, wait a minute, did I shoot that at 1/20, 1/25? I have to redo that.
Like, yeah. Yeah, totally. Totally. So I would love to get into like just your 2024 hunting season. Maybe take us through like from the beginning, the first tag you picked up, if you want to talk about like, I don't know what you use for draw odds, if you just kind of do that stuff old school, or if you're a hunting fool guy or a go hunt guy or a combination of all those things. I would love to hear, you know, what you do just in the off season, getting the tags, and then where you started.
Yeah. So, I mean, my first tag is when most people are on the off season. So I live in Arizona, and one of my absolute favorite hunts of the year is our over-the-counter archery deer season, which is in January. So this is when bucks rut here in Arizona. So it's over the counter for us. It's over the counter, like with caps for non-residents. It's kind of similar to the Idaho setup where you have to kind of like first come, first serve basis. And then when they're sold out, they're sold out. But I've been doing that hunt for I don't know how many years now. You know, I kind of grew up doing it. And so that's how I started my year. It was in January. I ended up spending 14 days in the field, which is usually way more than I'm usually in there in January. I shot my buck on January 30th and I packed him out on January 31st. So, my biggest archery coos deer to date, freaking awesome. He was like, I'm not a big score guy, but like, man, dude, you gotta like big bucks, man. They're awesome, you know what I mean? So I ended up taping him out. He went like 85 and a half as a 2 point, which is a big coos deer. So like if he was a 3 point, he would be over 100 inches for sure. Which is a large coos deer. And that's what I primarily hunt in January is coos deer. I don't really mess around with mule deer too much. I've exclusively hunted coos for almost a decade now. So
Oh, wow.
yeah, dude, I don't know. Like, I don't have anything against mule deer, but like I think like once I got my first coos with a bow, because I like when I started coos deer hunting, archery, like I should say when I started archery deer hunting in Arizona, I like swore off. I was like, I'm not hunting coos deer. It's too like I was just trying to learn how to bow hunt. I didn't even know what it felt like to miss yet. You know what I mean? So like I was like, I'm gonna hunt mule deer. Yes, it's all hard, but mule deer are easier than coos deer. Coos deer are on just a tight wire attention span, dude. Like they are wired so tight, and everything wants to eat them. You know what I mean? So like, they're super on edge, so it's very hard. It's very difficult to kill them with a bow. So in order to learn, I killed a couple mule deer with my bow, and then I got my first coos, and I was like, "That's it. I'm just on coos deer, man." Like, and I that's what I've done ever since in January. So, I messed around with javelina a little bit in January too. But then after that, that's kind of my end of hunting season is the end of January. So, from there, yeah, dude, I kind of like you were asking what I use for like draw odds and stuff. I kind of use a little bit of everything, you know, like top rut and stuff like that. To figure out draw odds and everything like that. But honestly, through the years, you know, somebody like I like to hunt a lot and I like to know that I'm going hunting. Okay. So I really like gear most of my trips towards hunts where there's draw odds aren't super important. Okay. Like, yes, things change as time goes on and some hunts get harder to draw and stuff like that. But like, most of the stuff that I'm doing is over the counter general type stuff because I know that I can go and do that. Cause usually like right now I know what I'm doing all year long right now. So I plan things out a year in advance pretty much. And on the draw end of things, I just focus on hunts where it's like 98% draw odds or 100% draw odds, stuff like that. So 2024, I ended up doing, what did I do in August? In August, I hunted fall black bear in Arizona. So I'm a big bear guy. I love bear hunting. Kind of cut my teeth bear hunting in Arizona and then branched out to other states after that. And we had a super rough season in the fall. I was talking to outfitters and stuff, and we've had a really dry year, and once the fall season hit, it was a full moon. It was like a heat wave came in on top of the normal heat that we already have. Okay. And I didn't see one bear in August, which in my preseason scouting, I found bears easy. But then like once that weather changed and the moon and everything like that, like they were like, man, I'm not coming out. You know what I mean?
They're gonna stay in the shade.
Yeah, pretty much. So that was rough, man. I spent 23 days fall bear hunting in Arizona, and I saw in October. So I saw a bear preseason. We have an August season and an October season. I saw a bear preseason from October, but then didn't see any bears in October until the end of October. I saw one bear for like 3 seconds. He was like going through this real thick stuff, and it was one of those things where it's like there's no way you're gonna have an opportunity to get a shot off, you know. But my bear hunt though in October, and then I'll back up because I did go elk hunting in September. My bear hunt in October ended up turning into a mountain lion hunt though, totally unexpectedly. Like it was, we saw four mountain lions in 48 hours, which was like it was unreal, man. It really was. And it was the same situation that we went through in August, super duper hot. We were fo so we we're focusing on water, trying water's super important in Arizona. And we go into a spot. I got a hot tip from a buddy, and we go in this spot, and we're sitting there glassing. About an hour before light, I glass over on this bluff, and I see this head like popped up from the other side of a rock. And I'm like, I looked at my camera guy, I'm like, dude, there's a mountain lion right there, and it's 240 yards away. He's like, no way. So he starts filming, and I'm like, dude, I have a mountain lion tag. He's like, well, like, what do we do? Let's shoot it, So I get down, and lay prone, and I look through the scope, and then I see another head pop up. There's two of them laying there together.
Wow.
So it was like, what was really hard to figure out was, I was like, is this a mom and a kitten? Is it siblings? Like, what's going on? So I was a dude, it was funny. I wish we had this on film, but I was literally on the phone with somebody from the Game and Fish, because I'm not a mountain lion guy. I don't know like all the parameters of the laws and stuff like that. So like, I'm like on the phone, literally watching this lion, these lions. Hey, what are the parameters around like a mom and a kitten? Like, how does that work? Like, what's illegal? What's legal? So it turned out that like the in Arizona, the law is if the kitten doesn't have spots, you are allowed to kill either, because at that point the kitten can take care of itself. And so it's not uncommon for mountain lions to stay with their mother until 14 months of age. So we're sitting there laying down. My camera guy is doing all manner of things, like elk calling, doing all sorts of noises, because we could not see the body of the smaller lion. Like, it was like laying facing us. So we're trying to get him to stand up. Dude, you want to talk about apex predator vibes? All right. Like, they just laid there and like looked at us, and then they just went to sleep at 240 yards. Like, not a care in the world. Okay.
You would
So
have.
we ended up hiking out of there, and we go into a different spot in the morning, and then we're like, you know what? Let's go back in that spot in the evening. Maybe, those lions are definitely going to be gone. Maybe a bear will roll through, because it was, I mean, that spot had the most water that we found. It was like, I mean, bears could swim there if they wanted to. So with such a dry year, we're like, they got to be around here somewhere. So we go back in there, and again, an hour before light, or hour before dark, I look across the canyon, and I see a lion walking across the hillside, a lone one. This one, it was giant. It must have been a giant tom. I'm like, oh my gosh, I think that's daddy. I don't know where the other lions went. So 340 yards, I get down prone. He walks into a brush pile, and I never see him come out.
Oh
And
no.
we sat there until dark, and he never came out. So like, I'm talking like belly dragon lion, like giant lion. So we get out of there, and on our way out, we're like, dude, I mean, we're on a bear hunt, but like, it really seems like these cats are glued to the water. So I'm like, well, like, whatever, man. Like, it's been a rough year. Like, we'll take what we can get. You know what I mean? Lion meat's delicious. We ended up going at this point. That was Sunday night. So Monday, we were dealing with a little bit of hunting pressure throughout the weekend, in a favorite spot of mine. So Monday, we're like, let's go back into like the zone where I saw the bear preseason, and everyone should be out of there. We should have it to ourselves. And we go in there, and like 30 minutes probably before dark, I look down, and we're hunting over water. Same type of situation. I look down, and there's a lion walking to the water. This is a completely different area.
Wow, dang, what are the chances, man?
No, seriously, like literally, like it'll never happen again. I feel like it's never gonna happen again in my life. Like the odds, like we saw more lions in 48 hours than both of us had seen in our entire lives. And we spent a lot of time in the mountains. Okay. So like, anyways, lion comes down. He's at like 200 yards, gets a drink, walks up. I stop him at 160, shoot, he falls. gets up again, runs. I shoot him again. He falls and then runs again.
Wow.
They have those, dude, they have so much go in them, those lions. I shot a lion like 10 years ago and he did the same thing. Like I shot him and he just, he kept running, you know? So anyways, we were like, the area to get down to there, like from where we were, not super easy to get down to where he was. Knowing that we didn't see the lion fall, we decided, you know what, like he's going to be fine in the bottom on the cool rocks. Let's go back in first thing in the morning. Went back in, found him pretty quick. Meat was cool to the touch. Yeah, had fajitas shortly after that at my house.
Awesome, man. That's good. So that crazy.
Yeah, dude, it was so wild. It was unbelievable. We got some like, and then like the footage we got, it was just, I probably never again, you know what I mean? Like probably never experienced that again. It was just really special to be able to share that together. But, anyways, and then in September, I did go elk hunting. I'm not a giant elk guy. I don't know if like people take offense to that or not, but like, I'm more of a deer guy. I like deer hunting and bear hunting, but elk, I backpacked into an area. It was the first place I had ever, done an out-of-state hunt like 10 years ago, eight years ago, I think it was, something like that. So I was like, man, it sounds cool to go back in there, you know, like a little more experienced, you know, and kind of give heave ho at it. I mean, long story short, super, super thick, low density elk. We were chatting with them every day or we would call them in, but just didn't pan out. You know what I mean? That's kind of how, and that was kind of my experience there before too, but what was interesting was the first time I went in when I had never done it before, the frequency of interactions, whether it was us seeing elk or, calling them in or setting up on them, whatever, was much, less. But this time when we went in, we were doing the thing every single day. Like we're like, okay, there he is. How are we going to do this? Blah, blah, blah. There was no days where we were like, we don't know what to do. So yeah. That was cool, but you know, it's bow hunting. Things don't always work out. And yeah, walked away from that one with no elk. So, and then fast forward, I hunted whitetail for the first time in November in Colorado. And I can't wait to do that again. My buddy manages this property over there. And, but as luck would have it, a 10-year storm hit before I showed up. And it was like, he's like, dude, it's never like, I've literally, he's managed this property for 10 years. He's like, I've never seen this before. Like all the ag got covered up. So once the food was gone, the deer left, very little deer sightings. I did have a giant buck at like eight yards, but I couldn't shoot him because there was a tree like right in the way. And I'm like, this tree stand thing is cool, but you know what? Like, it would be really nice to be able to pivot here.
Yeah, totally.
You know, so that was my whole year. Sorry for being long-winded, but that was my whole 2024 season. And I just came off 2025 coos year too. So
awesome. I want to go back to that elk hunt a little bit. Elk have a special place in my heart. So.
Oh yeah.
So if you don't mind me asking, you don't have to say, but what were you? Arizona, Idaho, Montana.
Oh, I'm sorry. We were in Colorado.
Colorado. Was that last year of the OTC tag or did you draw something?
No. So I drew it. It was a unit that it used to be OTC back when I first started doing this stuff. And now it's a draw, but it's like, it's super easy to draw. Like a lot of people are kind of bent out of shape about, you know, the over the counter going away. And I'm like, guys, I feel like you're still going to be able to go elk hunting. You just have to like put in.
Yeah. Apply.
You know what I mean? Like a lot of these units I feel like they're really just doing this to try to spread people out a little more, you know, instead of everyone funneling to a few different units, you know, like equalize pressure a little bit, which will also probably, you know, inevitably is probably going to help out the elk herd pending, you know, the wolf thing. I mean, I'm not, who knows, you know, about that. I swear we heard a wolf howl when we were out there.
Yeah. I've seen videos of guys that have wolves on footage that say they've already, I mean, they're already there.
Obviously
mm-hmm. adding more is not going to help anything and with the wolves, but I think the state of Colorado, I think it's more of a money thing. If you think, like in my head, I'm thinking if you have to apply now and then you're still going to buy the tags. So now mm-hmm. there's going to be thousands and thousands of guys now purchasing preference points and then paying the application fee. So in some sense, you know, I can see where they're coming from. They might need more revenue to help manage the wildlife or whatever, you know, whatever they're thinking. But
sure.
I haven't hunted Colorado yet. It's one of those states that I'm just building points in, and I'm not trying to get too carried away with how many points I get, because I do want to be able to hunt it multiple times. But my biggest fear personally with Colorado removing the OTC tags is what kind of ripple effect is that going to have in Montana and Wyoming and other surrounding states where guys, they maybe weren't playing the game there because they were able to go to Colorado. Right. My fear is a guy that's, we're all non-residents, but I spend 60 to 70 days a year in the field, right? I do usually four or five big 10, 12 day trips a year at a minimum. Plus some day hunts around here and whatnot. But, I guess my fear is what impact is it going to have to draw tags elsewhere, you know?
Right. Yeah. So. I mean, time will tell, you know what I mean? I'm kind of hoping it's like one of those things where, it's not going to be as bad as people are making it out to be.
Yeah.
You know, and people are still going to be able to hunt and stuff like that. But like, you're right. It'll probably have an effect a little bit. You know what I mean? Oh yeah. I'm going to go to Montana instead. You know what I mean? Instead of Colorado, which is like kind of a shame because, you know, Colorado is like the state for Midwest and East Coast guys.
Yeah. It's the closest state for them. Right.
Right. So so for those folks, I don't know, man, I think they're still going to go through the process. I think they're just going to do the draws, but the guys, you know, the go-getters that are out here out West, we might drive a little more north, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
We'll see.
Yeah. So, so back to the elk hunt. So I'm curious on your strategy. I know you're a big deer guy, so that's a lot of, I mean, it's pretty much all spot and stock for the most part. Were you trying to use a mixture of calling and spot and stock, or were you more or less spot and stock or more on the calling side? How did you approach that?
So I feel like if I were doing spot and stock, then I would have loosed an arrow. That's my style, you know. Where I was, there's meadows and stuff. There are some areas to glass, but in most of it's heavy timber. So, glassing and spot and stock really isn't on the table for most of that. So because of that, what we were doing was having hunted there before and kind of knowing, you know, like hunting elk in Arizona in September is night and day different than hunting in Colorado. Like the bulls answer you here. Like you're going, there are nights you cannot sleep from elk bugling in Arizona. In Colorado, I mean, I've had outfitters tell me, they're like, dude, don't make it sound. They're going to run. Yeah. They've like, they will sit there and watch dudes from, you know, North Carolina or something, elk call, and then the bulls run away. Okay. Yeah. So they're educated. So my strategy going into it was I was going to, try to do minimal calling. I would sneak around in areas that I knew or felt like elk would bed, kind of scoot through there and look for fresh sign, and then set up and do, like, you know, just cold calling sessions, you know what I mean? Like some cow calls, calf calls, a little bit here and there, and sit there for like an hour, you know? And that worked a couple times. Like, we called in cows and calves and stuff like that. We like had some bulls going and everything, but they never closed the bulls never closed the distance. We had cows and stuff within bow range, but now it's different. Okay. It used to be, you could shoot a bull or a cow on that hunt. Yeah. And me, I would have absolutely shot a cow if I could have. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But once, we did that for a couple days, we ran into some hunters, kind of sussed out the area, and we're like, you know what? This bull's been bugling across the drainage every single day. Which was funny because we didn't think he was across the drainage. It's funny how the bugle carries.
Yeah, and it's sometimes it's really hard to pinpoint it.
Oh, dude, it was like I could have sworn that he was like right beneath us on our side. Yeah. I feel like I could hear him breathe. Okay, yeah. Like, but he was clear across the canyon. And so once we figured that out, there was nobody going over there. So we're like, well, we're going to hunt this bull. I mean, that like don't have to deal with anybody over there. So what we did on that situation, and we got so close, dude. We just got so close. Like we would hike in the dark, not make a peep, get into the zone and just sit there.
Yeah.
And listen to him try to round up his cows or whatever, you know what I mean? And listen where he goes to bed. Once he did that, then and the thermals shifted, then we moved down, get on the bench and start side hilling in, you know, and kind of still hunting our way towards where we think he is.
Mm-hmm.
Setting up cold calling sessions along the way. Dude, we set up, okay, we do our thing, we're sitting there for 30 minutes, 35 minutes. And we're like, okay, let's get up. We get up. I walk like 10 yards. And he was in bow range the whole time, bedded. He just didn't come.
Oh no.
I just hear crashing.
Yeah.
I'm like, there's no way that was him. Like he was literally 50 yards away from us, and he didn't make a peep, didn't come to the call, nothing. You know what I mean? So that's kind of what we were dealing with.
Yeah.
That type of situation. And the last morning we was the closest we got to killing him. We actually glassed hit them up in the Alpine, which is like, we're like camped down at like 10. Right. Mm-hmm. And we look up at there at like 12:05. I'm like, well, let's go.
Here we go.
So, and that was so cool. So I was really excited about that. Cause I'm like, oh yes, this is my style. I can see them.
Yeah.
You know? Cause like things don't always work out, but I'm like, I feel like if I can see you, I can kill him. If I can see him, I can kill him. And so we get up in there. It just works out. You know what I mean? Like we get in the herd, they're chirping and bugling and stuff like that. And I mean, we're kind of just like moving like this, like with each other. And it was just hard to catch up to him. Finally, we catch up to the cows, and we got cows in bow range all around us. But for some reason, he doesn't like what's going on. We had the wind and everything, and he didn't like it. So he took the rest of his cows. I thought we were, that there was a satellite bull right beneath me. And I actually did come to full draw. There was a cow in front of me at 40 yards, and I could see an elk off to the left, a body of an elk, but I couldn't see its head. And I'm like, man, you know, and so she booked right. And I'm just like, instinctively, I just came to full draw thinking that that elk's going to follow her, and it never did. So I still to this day don't know if it was a bull, but that was the last morning I spent in Colorado. And that's kind of how we did it, man. We were kind of played like passive. I've tried the really aggressive tactics, you know, and I think they work. And keep in mind, like, I'm not an elk nut. Like, I'm not a nut for elk hunting and stuff like that, but just like based on the hunts I have done, the aggressive approach for me usually doesn't work. Just like the, like, you know, bugle 80 times a day and just all that, you know what I mean? I really like being able to, if I can hear them, I really like just being like, okay, I'm going to not say anything. I'm just going to go. I'm just going to move into them. That's kind of how I've found the most success in terms of interactions.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something I'm trying to incorporate more into my elk hunting style, just because I feel like I've been able to kill a bull pretty much every year with my bow, or, you know, years we went on trips and we've killed multiple bulls bow hunting, but they've all been being super aggressive and calling a ton. But my point is, I guess, is we've killed a lot of small, like 5-point rag bulls, some smaller 6 points. We haven't killed like an upper age class bull yet. Now we've seen plenty of them, of course, but they're so much smarter. They don't play the game like the young ones do. So, but I have a hard time with self-control during the rut to leave the bugle tube, like back at camp, you know?
Oh dude. And I tell you what, I know what you're talking about. And I don't know, man, the more Septembers that I spend elk hunting, the more I just want to leave it back at the tent, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, I don't know. So it's just, that's me though. You know, like, I just like being able to, I'm not even hunting elk in September this year.
Yeah.
I'm like, screw this. I'm going to hunt antelope.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm hoping to draw a tag in your state. I applied the other day. I kind of swung for the fences this year because I have some other stuff. I applied for Wyoming as well, which I should draw, like pretty positive I'm going to draw that tag. But yeah. I can't wait to get to Arizona. I got eight.
Are you trying to get September?
No, I'm going to go late rifle.
Oh, cool.
I don't want to wait 20 years to draw a tag in Arizona. I want to get there as soon as I can. So I swung for the fences this year on purpose, but I normally don't swing for the fences. I normally apply where I would call like a mid-tier non-resident tag. But
Where'd you go for? If you don't mind me asking, what are you going for?
Which unit?
Yeah.
I think I'll tell you.
You can tell me after the podcast. It's fine.
Yeah. I'll tell you all the ones I have. I've e-scouted like for hours in Arizona, but I'm going to save that one for me. And you later.
Yeah. No, I'm happy to help if you do draw in any way I can, but yeah.
Well, I really appreciate that. But Arizona is just like, I have a buddy, actually Joseph from, he's Way Out West Adventures on Instagram and YouTube, but he drew a tag with 1 point in the, in the lottery or the random, whatever you want to call it.
Yep.
And he went down, 3 or 4 days early and he ended up shooting a pretty nice 6-point bull on opening morning. So anyway, that just kind of sparked the fire even more, like, man, I can't wait to get down to Arizona and chase elk around. Dude.
It's cool. It's honestly like, so I've never hunted, I've never elk hunted in Wyoming or Montana, but like, I don't know, dude, like ever since I elk hunted in Arizona, like everywhere else kind of
let down.
It's not great. Like it's fun, but it's just not the same. Yeah. You get really spoiled, dude. Like it's,
yeah. Well, I want to ask you, you know, I actually, back to Arizona late season, I've been thinking about the late archery hunts. You can draw some really killer tags, late archery season, obviously, cause it's tough. What do you think about the late bow season for elk? Is that something that you think I should consider maybe in lieu of the rifle?
Yes. Okay. I mean, you know how to kill elk with a bow. So, I mean, here's what it is, man. It all comes down to, like, in my opinion, like what you're looking to get out of a hunt.
Yeah. Right?
Like if you just want to come elk hunt in Arizona, I think you absolutely should consider that late archery tag. Cause you will legitimately be able to hunt in units that take 20 plus years to draw in September. So you're very potentially hunting. Now, obviously the bulls move. Okay. Mm-hmm. But, we don't really deal with a migration like some of our northern states do. Okay. So you could very realistically be hunting bulls, like the same bulls that you would hunt in September in November.
Yeah.
But maybe they're a little broken. Maybe they're not.
Right.
It just kind of depends. Like elk, they fight a lot here. So we get a lot of broken bulls in the later season. But dude, that's to me, like, that's what I'm doing. I that's what I put in for the late archery elk hunt. Like, and it's just, to me, it's deer hunting. It's deer hunting and elk,
but it's easier because
how
bigger.
I look at it.
Yeah.
Yes. That is what, like, they are so depleted at that time of year that when you find a bull, you can dang near throw a blanket on top of him. Like he's kind of going to stay in a little zone, walk in his same footsteps. You know what I mean? And if nothing pushes him out, you know, like a lion or hunting pressure or something like that, if nothing pushes him out, you just have the ability to be like, okay, I know where he's going to bed. I can set up, you know, these are the kind of the trails he's working, blah, blah, blah. Like, I've literally watched elk day after day, like walk the same exact trails, these bulls, and go into the same areas to bed down. The hard part is a lot of times where they're bedding, you just don't have a shot.
Right.
Because they are in some stuff that is so, so thick. Okay. Where like you might only see like, you know, his back tine sticking up. You know what I mean? And that's that. I had that happen a lot a few years back when I had that tag. And I've actually had that tag quite a bit. And like, that has been the issue is like, I'm in bow range, but I literally, like, I see antlers sticking up above the scrub oak, but I can't take a shot because I can't see their body.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So, but it's absolutely worth looking into though, man.
Yeah, it's definitely on my radar. And honestly, the main reason it is because I feel like it gives myself the best opportunity to kill an upper age class bull. You know, and that's one thing about Arizona that I think everyone knows is that there is a chance to kill a 300 plus bull in that state, right? You guys grow big elk.
Oh, so, 100 dude. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. Like a 305 or 297 or 310 to me would be like a dream come true, right? I'm used to these, you know, small fives and small sixes. So I would be over the moon with one of those, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, there's really big elk here.
Yeah. Yeah. Believe me. I watch that stuff on YouTube.
One of the spots that I used to spring bear hunt, before part of our spring bear season got cut. So we can't hunt that time of year anymore. But like, it's where, the raffle hunt goes every year for elk. Yeah. It was like, you're literally looking at like 370, 390 bulls.
Yeah, my gosh.
As you're looking for bears. So yeah, we are spoiled.
Yeah. So do you do any shed hunting with those big bulls out there, or do you
no, get into that? I'm just not a shed. I really tried to be a shed guy a long time ago, and it just doesn't do it for me. Like shed, I mean, it's during spring season, you know, and it's like, dude, I'd rather be bear hunting or turkey hunting or something like that. Mostly bear hunting. I'd rather be out bear hunting during that time of year. So
yeah. Yeah. I do a lot of spring bear hunting. And if I come across the shed, I picked up this shed over my shoulder spring bear hunting, but I don't really spend any time doing it. It is something I've thought about doing just to like stretch my legs, you know, get some exercise, go out in the mountains, but it doesn't get the juices flowing for me yet.
Dude, me neither. Like, some folks are crazy about it, you know. Like, here's where I'm at. When we're packing out my lion, I'm not just saying this. I literally almost stepped on like a 330, 340 shed. I didn't know it was there. And my camera guy's like, hey, are you gonna leave? He's an elk guy. He's like, are you gonna leave that there? I'm like, leave what there? And I look down, I'm like, holy crap, look at this thing. So I gave the shed to him. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah.
So I'm curious about the camera guy. I've noticed that it sounds like you've had someone filming with you on most of your trips. Mm-hmm. Is that somebody that, I guess, I don't know, are you doing the YouTube and your social media stuff like full time?
Yep.
Okay, so I'm curious with the camera guy, is that something that you're forking up out of your pocket to bring that guy with you on every trip? Or are your partners or sponsors helping pitch in on that to get content for their, you know, their marketing team and stuff like that? Or is it a combination of both? Or,
I mean, so like, the short answer is I pay for it, but okay. I get paid to do what I do. So like,
it's part of the expense.
Yes, partners and stuff are contributing in the name of creating content for sure. So yeah.
Awesome.
And it's not something like I really wish I could have him with me on every hunt that I do. you know, but dude, camera guys are expensive. You know what I mean? And he deserves every dime that I give him. He really does. He makes my life so much more easy when he's with me. There is something that I'm a camera guy too, though. You know what I mean? So I really enjoy imagery and I enjoy creating film and taking photos and stuff like that. So like the times that he's not with me, I kind of, you know, I enjoy myself, you know what I mean? Cause I can actually, I'm more part of the creating process rather than like, and I'm much more, directed with my, with what I'm filming. Like when he's with me, like he'll give me at the end of a trip, like pretty much on average, he's going to give me like probably a terabyte full of footage.
Yeah.
And I don't film in 4K.
Oh my God. So that's a ton of footage.
Yeah.
Hours and hours.
Oh yes. And that's, there's photos included in that too. Okay. But like, long story short, I have a lot to go through. You know, the plus side is I have a lot to work with. Okay. Mm-hmm. But when I film myself, I use most of what I film. Because right. I know I'm like, no, I'm going to get this. And then I like see how it goes in my mind. I'm going to get this. It's very targeted, yeah. You know, rather than Dylan, my camera guy, he's just kind of filming the entire experience, you know, which is, there's also something nice about that though, too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I've only had one camera guy come on a trip with us and it was an awesome experience to not have to carry the camera, but I totally agree with you. Like I wouldn't really call myself a camera guy. I'm not that good yet, but you know, I enjoy having the camera. I enjoy taking pictures. I enjoy filming, and just learning and going through the process. And I totally get what you mean. It's like when you're self filming, I do that a lot. You kind of have this story in your mind as the day you go through the day and things kind of, you know, when to film and not to film. Like, you know, you're more to the point, I guess. So I get what you're saying. Like when I got the footage from the guy that filmed for me on an elk hunt, there was so much there. I almost was like overwhelmed. Like what clip to use? Do I use this clip? You know what I mean? Like it's easy to get kind of lost in all that stuff.
Yep. 100%, dude. I know exactly what you mean. It's always better in my opinion, like too much is better than not enough. You know, yeah. But it's like if you aren't experienced and you don't really, you know, you're not really savvy with the camera. In my experience, you're always going to get not enough.
Right.
Okay. And that's the problem I ran into when I first started filming and taking photos and stuff. I would get home and I'd be like, dang it, I wish I filmed more, you know? Mm-hmm. And even like 2 seconds goes a long way.
Right.
It that really does.
That could be the 2 seconds that grabs the audience.
Yeah, it could be 2 seconds of a leaf blowing in a tree or something like that. Like just something to like fill gaps. And I'm not saying like you just want to put like fillers in everything, but it really just helps like the story move along, you know, filming more things than just you talking and animals walking around. You know what I mean? Like there's so much more to the hunting experience than that. And that's really like my goal. That's like what I really try to show in my films is if you're looking for like a whack 'em and stack 'em type of video, don't go to my channel because that's not what you're going to get with me. Like I really am more about telling a story, you know, and like, I want you to feel like you're with me out there, you know, not that you know what I mean? That's kind of my goal with right. that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's always a struggle. I find myself, you know, when I get home and I get all the footage on my computer and I start trying to put something together is all that filler stuff that does help like complete the story. A lot of my footage is self-filmed. So I'm just kind of vlog style talking to the camera. I definitely got to improve in that area, just being more creative on things to show to the guys that do watch the videos, just to keep them more engaged, I guess. Cause sitting there watching a guy talk to the camera for 30 minutes, no one's going to stick around and watch that for very long. Let's be honest, you know? So
you better have some good stuff to say.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
you know?
For sure.
But yeah, I mean, you know, like getting those, like it makes you, once you self film a couple hunts, you know, you go and you look at guys like Remy and Tim and it's like, you know what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know the work that they're putting in now. And it's it's a lot. It really is, you know? So
Yeah, but there's
that stuff inspires me, man.
Totally. Yeah, totally. There's a guy out there, Martin Chagg, that he does a ton of self-filming. And he's somebody that pops up in my mind sometimes, like, that dude put some killer films together for somebody that's doing most of it solo. The time it takes to set all that stuff up and get those shots by yourself, and they don't look set up. It looks natural for a guy that's solo, and for it to look like that, the amount of work and thought that goes into getting shots like that is it's impressive to me anyway.
Yeah. What's interesting is that I don't know how other people do this, but when I am, when I film myself, so I'll have an idea of a storyline in my head and I'll write down a couple kind of things that I want to talk about throughout the week to help move the story along and send a message. That's another thing that I really like to, I like my films to have a message. I don't want them to just be a hunting show, you know? But when it comes to the filming side of things, I don't really have a shot list when I'm doing it myself. When I have a camera guy with me, I mean, we have a detailed Google Doc that gets sent to him.
Yeah.
Of like, here's what we're looking for. Here's what partners need. Here's the story we're trying to tell. Try to focus on these things. Kind of, if you see me tired or something like that, make sure you get that stuff like that. Like it's very detailed and stuff. And so he knows, because once you get in the field, like, I mean, sometimes, you know, things happen fast and you lose track of what you're doing, but that kind of helps him stay on track. And then I don't have to worry about what I actually need. And I can focus more on hunting rather than, hey, did you get this? Did you get that? And stuff. But with me, when I do it myself, I'm more like, I just kind of fly by the seat of my pants because I kind of know what I need in my head, you know, and I just kind of, oh, that's cool. I'm going to get this. This would be really cool if I did this, blah, blah, blah. Gosh dang it. I got to get the tripod out now. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of how my brain works when I'm by myself.
Yeah. Same here. It just kind of goes with the flow. It just comes naturally almost after you do it for a little while. I know when I first started, it was like, I hated talking to the camera. I felt awkward or whatever, but now it's just like, no big deal. You know, just.
Yeah. You're like, I know someone's glassing me up right now and I look like a dumb dumb, but you know, I got to do this.
Yeah. Is what it is. Oh, well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So how long have you had the YouTube channel going?
So the YouTube, I've had the YouTube channel for quite a while. But like probably 8 years or so. But like, I really didn't start taking it seriously until a few years ago. Like, in all honesty, like, dude, I never wanted to film anything. I didn't, like, my brother got a new iPhone a long time ago. And he's like, dude, can I film? He was really into it. He's like, can I film you with my phone? I'm like, go ahead. I was writing mostly in the industry. Like, and I still do I write a lot of articles and stuff. So I was more concerned with photography, and the video thing was just kind of annoying to me. I'm like, this is like something else I have to worry about. I don't want to have to focus on something else. So he just filmed and he would put these films together and I was like, whatever, I'll make a YouTube channel. And I put them up there, you know? A couple of years ago, I just really like realized, I'm like, man, I like photography and video is the same thing. It's just moving. And the fact of the matter is not everyone reads, right? So like, I was like, man, I wonder if I can, in terms of like films, I can apply my writing to my films and combine them to still like convey a message, but do it in a visual format, right? And that's kind of been my style since I started filming my hunts. It's evolved over time. You know what I mean? Like I tried doing episodes and stuff like that. And it's just like, that's not my, I quickly realized I liked resolve. I like just like, if I'm going to go on a week long hunt, there's going to be one film, you know, and I want it like it's a beginning and an end, you know what I mean? And you're going to watch that and you're going to have resolve at the end of that. And yeah, through that, I just was like, you know, gear reviews and talking about tips and stuff like that, all that type of stuff. I love gear, like all of us do, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So yeah, it's really, I mean, it's grown quite a bit. I'm nowhere near, there's guys that have way more followers than me, but it's grown quite a bit in the past few years.
Yeah. Yeah. I know I enjoy the stuff you put together. We talked a little bit offline before we hit the record button, that film you did with Dylan, that mule deer film. And, I think it was Idaho Presence. That film was, I don't know what it was about it exactly, but that's probably the good thing about it was I was entertained from start to finish. It's like one of the ones that pops in my mind that you watch and you're not like fast forwarding. You go from start to end and the video's over and you're like, oh my God, I watched that whole thing already. What the heck?
Well, yeah, dude, what I was trying to say before we hit record was like, so Dylan and I met, that was the first time Dylan and I ever met. And we pack in, it's gnarly. It takes like 7 hours for us to get into camp and we get set up, wake up the next morning. We're thinking that, or at least I was, that it was going to be October weather in Idaho, right? Like kind of cold, right? That was so far from the truth. It was crazy. Okay. So I brought all this cold, I had puffy pants, you know, like thinking it's going to be like normal October. And so I went floorless with my shelter. Well, like I'm floorless. My entire, like there's spiders everywhere throughout the entire night, just crawling on my face and everything. Like I did not get a good night of sleep. It was like a horror film on the inside of my tent. And like, so I woke up that morning and I'm like, we're killing a deer today. And it just worked out. Like we hiked up the ridge. I literally at gray light found a couple bucks and went over there. 20 minutes later, the buck was dead. And we're like, dude, what just happened? You know what I mean? And that is all the footage that we got. Like we didn't get like, no, we didn't get like everything you see like that. It was literally the entire hunt in that film, which I was super stoked about that. Like it was kind of a test for me too. Like first time working with Dylan, like, let's see, like he got enough for me to make an actual film. You know what I mean? In that short amount of time. And it worked out great. And I was like, dude, I'm sorry, but like, you're kind of stuck with me now, you know?
Yeah. So yeah, that's impressive. So, yeah, I mean, for like a day and a half to get, I mean, that film was like what, 25, 30 minutes long, if I remember right. I mean, it wasn't short. It was right in the sweet spot, in my opinion. And there wasn't any parts of that film, like where there was like a gap, the story just flowed from like one piece to the next. So well, I really enjoyed that one for sure.
I appreciate that. That's cool, man. Thank you.
So I'm curious too on, editing. Like, is there a specific software that you like love? Have you maybe started with one and switched to another, or are you going like Adobe or DaVinci Resolve or Final Cut, or what are you using?
Yeah. So I've always been an Adobe guy. I use Adobe Premiere Pro. I've heard great things about DaVinci. I haven't heard great things about Final Cut, but I have heard great things about DaVinci. And, I don't know, man. I feel like it's taken me so long to learn what I know in Adobe. Mm-hmm. I don't see myself leaving anytime soon. You know what I mean? Cause like, dude, those editing softwares, they do so much. There are so much capability in those softwares that like the learning curve is harsh. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Especially like when I signed up for Adobe, I didn't know how to edit. So right. Like I was literally like, I learned how to edit on Adobe Premiere Pro through YouTube.
Yeah.
Just watching YouTube videos and trial and error, you know, like that's, I was like, well, let's try to put this together or whatever. You know, I didn't even know how to drop a clip in the timeline.
Yeah.
You know,
same here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm an Adobe guy too. I started with Filmora, which was free at the time. And then I quickly switched to Adobe. And then realized that my computer wasn't good enough to handle footage and had to buy a new computer and went through that whole process of learning how to do this stuff. But I just figured out like 6 months ago that they have a custom bin over like in the effects panel where you can like drag and drop the effects that you like to like use, you know, and that's like a shortcut mm-hmm. feature. I'm sure yeah. you probably already knew that was there, but I just figured that out like 4 years later.
Oh, dude, listen, if I could keep the whole screen how I had it when I first started, that would be great.
Yeah.
Because I know where everything is. When they do like updates and stuff, I'm like, where is it? How do I change the font size? How do you like,
yeah.
So,
yeah.
So that was a recent update. Now you have to go into like graphic parameters in order to like change font size, font style, everything like that, dude. I was like, how, like that took me forever to figure out, like, what the heck? Yeah. Like I was going to YouTube videos and like, go to this. I'm like, I don't know where that is.
Right. Like, yeah. So did you update to the 2025 version?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I saw that update come out and I played with it a little bit and I'm like, no, I'm staying with my 2024 version. Like I have my export settings saved in 2024 Premiere Pro. So I went into 2025 and that's where I started. I'm like, okay, I'm going to get on YouTube and, you know, figure out the best export settings for the new software. And yeah. as I started putting those custom features in, it didn't work. It didn't turn out the way that my 2024 stuff worked. And I was like, you know what? I'm not even going to mess with it. I'm done with this. I'm going back to my old stuff. I know how to use.
Yeah. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, totally, man. That stuff is so hard to figure out already. I'm definitely not. I'm just going to leave it where it is.
Yeah. I feel like that's a job in itself, man. You're like just being like a Premiere Pro wizard. Goodness gracious, man.
Yeah. Oh, so I'm curious about your cameras too. So when you film, when you're solo filming, are you running one camera or do you bring like a film camera and a picture camera or how are you doing that?
So I bring, when I'm solo filming, I bring one main camera. So I have a A7 IV that I bring okay. with me. Fantastic do-it-all camera. It's got good pixels for photography, good video settings, good and low light. It's kind of a do-it-all camera. I used to run the R series cameras because I was more focused on photography and you get like giant images, like 60 megapixels.
Yeah.
You know, which was awesome, but I definitely like, there were some video capabilities, obviously like, so with a big sensor like that, you're giving up low light on the video side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then I only bring one lens with me, 24-70, 2.8 is what I bring. It's my main lens. And then a Rode NTG shotgun mic is what I use. That's my main setup. And then, if I'm bow hunting, I usually have a GoPro with me with a head mount on it. Rifle hunting, I've experimented with a few different things with that. Like, so I used to actually carry a, Sony AX100, which is basically it's a 4K handy cam.
Yeah.
Fantastic for getting wildlife because you have like the zoom on it and stuff. And so I rocked that for a couple of years for rifle hunts and had success with getting shots on film with that thing and got great wildlife footage with it. But when you're doing like backpack hunts and stuff like that, you know what I mean? Like weight matters. And it was another brick that I was bringing with me. So I was like, okay, nowadays what I've been doing, if I solo film a rifle hunt is I just bring my spotting scope with an all-in adapter on my phone, you know, and just try to get it like that. Dylan has, when he comes in, that dude's got three bodies with him. Okay. He's got two for video and one for photo. He'll have like an R series for photo work and he'll take pictures with all of them a little bit, but main photo work will be with the R series. He's got one camera with, I think he uses like a 24 to 102 or something like that. 24 to 105, something like that. As a run and gun lens. And then he's got, I think he might carry another smaller, a 50 mil that he likes carrying a 50 mil with him in his backpack. But then on his back, he runs a, S3s, by the way, is the videos. He runs like, he brings a 200 to 600 lens. And it's like, that's two times the size of my spotting scope.
Yeah, I have one. I know it's heavy. It's like 8 pounds or something.
Heavy. Yeah, dude, it is heavy. So yeah, so he's going in multiple tripods and like, so yeah, that's not me though. He's, yeah, I just bring one camera and my phone.
Yeah,
GoPro if I'm boat hunting.
Yeah,
so
I got to figure out a new GoPro mount. I killed a bull in Montana this year and I had the GoPro on my head, like right here on the top of my hat. Mm-hmm. But when you get to full draw, like you can see the animal coming in, right? Like at 40 yards, a little bit on the GoPro. But as soon as you draw and you have, you know, you get your anchor point and your cam's right in front of your face, it blocks the animal. So I'm trying to come up with a better way to use the GoPro. So when I come to full draw, it's not blocking the shot. You know what I'm saying?
What's blocking the shot?
So when I have the GoPro on like a head strap on top of my, like right in front of my forehead, basically.
Yeah.
And when I draw my bow back and I get into my anchor point, my bow is blocking a lot of the view of the GoPro. You know what I'm saying?
So you
can see a little bit of what's going on, but my bow is kind of the main focal point. So I got to figure out a better way to get the GoPro at like a different angle, like maybe off to the side or something.
Do you put it in the center of your head?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So you gotta, I offshoot it a little bit. So if you go like off to the left, if you're a right hand shooter, go mm-hmm. off to the left, then when you're at full draw, your bow will be on the right side of the frame.
Yeah. I see that. I should have done that.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, if it's in the center, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
So do you have some sort of like swivel or ball head adapter that allows you to square the camera up?
Nope. I just use the standard GoPro head mount. And mm-hmm. I just put it on crooked, just like you would put a hat on crooked.
I see. Okay.
Just put it on crooked and then tilt it just a little bit forward, just a little bit. And it'll work out. Yeah. It'll work out good like that. My problem is I always forget to put the damn thing on I remember one time I thought I hit record, but I actually stopped recording.
Yeah. I've done that too.
I have this like this like giant deer beneath me in Utah, and I was like, oh sweet, and then I go look at the camera and it wasn't on. I'm like, dang it, dude.
It happens to all of us, man. That's for sure.
Yeah, so
all right. Yeah, well, that's a good tip. I'm gonna have to do some practicing in my front yard shooting my bow, and once I get that figured out, it's gonna be definitely helpful.
Yeah.
Well, hey, man, it's been like an hour. I don't want to keep you too long. I just want to thank you again for hopping on. It was a pleasure chatting with you.
Heck yeah, man. Thanks for having me on anytime.
Yeah, we'll have to do it again maybe this time next year after all your hunts are done.
Yeah, yeah, same. It'd be nice to hear how your season went too.
Yeah, that'll be fun. All right, well, you have a good night, man.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, guys, hope you enjoyed that episode. Hey, we're trying to grow the podcast, and you can help us do that by heading over to the main page, scrolling down to the bottom of it, and leaving us a review. We'd really appreciate it. We're trying to grow the show, and your feedback will help a ton. So take a few seconds and knock it out, and we'll catch you on the next one.